Thank you, John. I'll invite Bruce, Vincent and Bill Bush to come up to the front and sit and field some questions. And Deb's agreed to stay on the panel as well in case there's a tricky political question that might be asked. While you're thinking about questions, let me be the first one to lead off, and I guess it might go to Bruce, but others can answer. From an OH&S perspective, what are the consequences for a government if a prison officer has a needle stick injury and there are contracts a bloodborne virus in circumstances that John's talked about where other alternatives are possible?
Well, the prison officer would be entitled very probably to compensation under... Can't hear?
Yeah.
Okay, just to answer Brian's question, if a prison officer was injured as a result of a needle stick injury occasioned while doing that person's employment in the correctional institution, that prison officer would be entitled, I would think, to compensation under the Comcare legislation. He'd be entitled to, well, his average earnings for the first, I think, 6 months, and also, if he was injured graphically or dramatically, he may also be entitled to a lump sum payment. The nexus is basically he's got to be injured as a result of his employment, and he's then entitled to compensation. He may also have some limited common law rights if there was a breach, for instance, of the occupational health and safety laws that resulted in his injury. So the short answer, I guess, to Brian's question is that the prison officer would be entitled to compensation, provided that the injury occurred during the course of his employment, which I'm assuming it would have, and that compensation would be based on his pre-accident earnings and also possibly a lump sum payment. Does that sort of answer the question? Yeah, sure. If the owners of the prison breached the occupational health and safety law in some way, in other words, if there was a graphic breach there and that caused injury to someone, then they'd be liable, I would assume, as far as the occupational safety, health and safety laws goes. I mean, there's criminal penalties in there. I think, remember, there's also civil penalties, which means that if there was a graphic breach of duty, it would have to be pretty graphic, and there was very clearly defined fault, and the employer was at fault, in the same as any industrial accident, the employer would be responsible and liable for that injury, not only as far as possibly compensation is concerned, but also as far as possibly, it's a possibility that criminal law is concerned.
And in fact, the result of that is the industrial.
Possibly, there's no reason as to why it shouldn't. But again, it would have to be a very graphic injury, I would think, very, very graphic cause of action there, and very, very blatant fault as far as the employer is concerned. But I mean, this is speculative, it's in the future and depends on the circumstances. But the answer in theory would be yes, depending on the circumstances and depending how graphic the fault was. I guess. Any other questions to me while I'm still here? Before I run. Yes?
I'm just wondering, that's Joe Brown and a prisoner. Suffers a similar injury.
Mm. John, I think, during the course of his speech, referred to the revised guidelines in 2004 for correctional institutions and prisoners. And one of the provisions that came out in that guideline was that prisoners are owed a duty of care. Now, if there's a breach of that duty of care, then quite clearly the prisoner's going to have a claim, a cause of action against the prison authorities, or in this case, I guess, against the ACT government in relation to that breach of duty. Big question, of course, is what is a breach of duty? How far does that breach go? That depends, again, on whatever the standard of care is. And until, of course, define the standard of care, we're not going to know whether there's been a breach of a duty of care, which leads in common law to negligence and a claim for compensation. But the answer would be yes. If there's a breach of duty of care by the prison authorities, the prisoner would have a right of compensation against the persons, in this case the ACT government, vicariously, for that breach of the duty of care. And that will depend upon what care was taken in the circumstances and what wasn't done to protect that prisoner in those circumstances. But clearly there'd be a claim there, provided that the duty was breached. Any other questions while I'm hovering around?
Daniel.
Under certain circumstances for a prisoner, is there employment in the prison like working on a direct
I don't know the answer, but I assume it's an assumption that a prisoner who's actually working in the prison system and being paid whatever the dollar rate is per day for working in the prison system is covered by occupational health and safety. That person would certainly be covered by, I would think, by the common law of negligence. And again, if there's a breach in relation to occupational health and safety, it's likely to be a breach as far as the common law of negligence is concerned. So a person who's injured while working in the prison system will probably be entitled to compensation, again, depending upon the circumstances, and again, depending on how graphic and how provable that fault is, that lack of supervision, that lack of assistance, that lack of training may be in the cause of that prisoner to be injured. Any other questions for me? Yo. There's a duty of care. I don't know how established it is. As far as the common law of negligence is concerned, you've got a number of rules that relate to it. You've got to establish a duty of care. Quite clearly in this particular circumstance, as we've seen through John's speech, there's a duty of care owed by prison authorities to prisoners. The next big issue, the big issue, is what is the standard of care? Has there been a breach of that duty of care? And that's what the courts determine. I work for plaintiffs, for claimants, and if I'm looking at a claim, I'm asking myself two things. Basically, what harm's been occasioned to the person? What injury did the person suffer? And secondly, how did that person come to suffer that injury? Now, if that person came to suffer that injury, whether it be a prisoner or someone else, but if that person came to suffer that injury as a result of some fault, some dereliction in duty, some harm that shouldn't have occurred, then that person has a claim for damages in negligence. If the person's employed also, as far as the occupational health and safety legislation goes, for breach of statutory duty, and also if the person's employed for breach of the contract of employment, the employer duty to take care for that person's welfare by the employer. So does that answer that one more or less? Oh, if it goes to court, most cases don't actually go to court. Most civil cases settle outside the court before they ever get to the doors of the court. Of course, usually because the plaintiff and the defendant both know that the defendant's liable, it's a question of how much is the claim worth and how much can the defendant get away with paying. But if it goes to court, most arguments are based on whether there's a duty of care. It's usually pretty much accepted there is a duty of care. The argument usually revolves around what is the breach, what is the standard, and that again depends on what's reasonable in the circumstances. And here, I suppose, if you're trying to show there's a breach of the duty of care as far as the prison authorities are concerned, you'd be looking at prison systems elsewhere, interstate, and saying, this is what they do interstate. This wasn't done here. This should have been done here. Therefore, there's a breach of that standard of care. Therefore, the plaintiff's entitled to damages is how it would go, I think. Questions?
I'll give someone else a go.
Oh,
someone else a go to answer some questions. If there's more questions.
Did you have legal and permitted needles? But you still prohibit drugs, so that they're still hiding drugs. From a health point of view of the prisoners using them, wouldn't supplying drugs also improve the health because they'd get purer, less polluted supply? Who would like to take that?
It's a breach of the law as it exists at the present time, I suppose. I mean, prohibition, as far as drugs is concerned, is still what the law is at this point in time. So I suppose there's two different issues out there in relation to a needle syringe program, in terms of forcing of harm minimisation and trying to avoid the harm that otherwise flow from having secret covert needles, and condoning absolute outright drug users and saying, okay, we're going to supply drugs because otherwise it's going to be more and more people suffering in jail from illicit drug use. To my mind, they're linked, but they're also two separate issues in the sense that on the one hand, you're trying to get harm minimisation away from the damage caused by illicit needles in jail, and secondly, saying, look, we're going to condone drug use. But the two aren't necessarily linked together, I guess is what I'm saying, or trying to say.
Bill, did you want to have a...
I'll let that...
Move past it, but answer
thing. No one.
More questions? Deborah?
Yeah, Deborah, on SBT, women in prison. So, if we're opening a prison in ACT, running on the philosophy of human rights, is it not already a breach of duty of care not to provide needle syringe program in there? Or do we have to wait for yet another poor victim to contract Hep C to actually have that in court to enforce that human right?
Who wants to answer that? Bill's going to have a shot at
Thank
this.
You for that, Deb.
I think the answer, short answer to your question is yes. What John has said is just absolutely clear, that wherever syringes have been provided in prisons overseas, prisons have become a safer place for those who work in prisons and for those who are kept in prisons. The figures about people who actually inject for the first time in prison. I think the ACT government is living in fantasy land in believing that prisons, the drugs will not get into the prison. And just to take, in relation to the previous question, there is a sort of a conflict, but so much as a shunting of different principles that are involved in here. The community decided as a matter of value that it will not have certain drugs. But is that to be elevated above the well-being of people? Is that to be elevated above the fact of the children of people in prison, the welfare and health of people who work in prisons? Indeed, is it to be above the welfare of people whose houses get broken into? I mean, these are big issues, and they are at the core of this debate. It's a debate which has moved on in the community in the 20 years since syringes there. It is obviously one that is still being, as it were, at issue in our prisons. And prisons, as John said, have overseas been a powder keg for the development and spread of bloodborne disease, which has affected everyone in the community.
One last question.
What opportunities has we created for senior prison management here to learn from overseas experience and to discuss the implications of what it is? Thank you.
I'm not from Canberra, I'm afraid, but Annex has actually tried unsuccessfully to raise money to bring prison officers from prisons where NSPs are operating to Australia to speak to some of the local people, but we've actually struggled to get the money and still haven't. So I think it's a very good question, because the fact is, whilst it's a stretch for the officers to equate what's happening in the community with the police and the way that the police are handling complex issues, it's a much less of a stretch to relate to and understand prison officers from other custodial settings internationally. And therefore, I think it's absolutely key. Getting through the door is a challenge itself, and also getting the money to do it. So if anyone's got a couple of spare, like 20, 30, 40 grand, I'll be here afterwards. I must say, though, I'm flippant about it, but I had a chat with Marion from Family and Friends a couple of weeks ago, and one of the challenges that we face as an organisation trying to promote evidence-based practice in an area that's completely and absolutely socially maligned. And if I was here talking about tougher sentences or less televisions in prison or less rehabilitation in prison, I would actually find some supporters fairly easily. Actually, pushing issues that are not favourable to the tabloid media, I've found, is actually extremely difficult, even in the philanthropic field, where people are wealthy and wanting to give to good causes. They don't there's another PR issue that's on top of the good cause.
I should say also that there's been running themes throughout presentations that have been going on in the ACT, trying to get the debate in the community, trying to raise awareness in the community on this particular issue. The CES, the Christians for Ethical Society, has run, as David mentioned earlier, a number of forums. The Corrections Coalition of the ACT, which is a coalition of non-government organisations that have an interest in prison, and these debates have been going on. The problem has been that the debate is not engaged by the corrections people and not necessarily fully engaged by government. And despite best efforts, it's still not fully engaged. And it would seem to me that the result has got to come from someone in the prison suffering because they haven't done this. Now, I think it's about time we had some lunch and so on. So if I can ask Deb if she'd close off for us and invite us to lunch.
He's put the words into my mouth. But I do think it is time for political comment. And I think that we do in the ACT Labor government have a government that is inclined, as we know, towards human rights. And possibly amongst our ministers and other Labor members, there is a desire to have a needle and syringe program. Well, just think if after the next election, and remember we are having an election in October, just imagine that we got, and I'm predicting that we will have a minority government, and even the Chief Minister has predicted that. Imagine if we got a crossbench made up of right-wing people, the people who do push law and order, the sort of several more Steve Pratts, for instance. And the kind of outcome that we might see in relation to our prison and other issues related to, for instance, roadside drug testing, for instance. These are some of the themes that are brought up over and over again in the Assembly by Steve and others of his colleagues. So there is that moment. Remember that a minority government does have, but perforce is influenced by its crossbench, and therefore the issue is, as always, in your hands to a very large extent. But we cannot leave here today or leave on our way to eating some of Marion's excellent sandwiches and other product without thanking our speaker and Bruce, who came along at the last minute to answer the really curly questions, and Bill, and Brian, and everyone else that's had something to do with today. It's been fantastic. The prison will open quite soon, and all eyes will be upon it. Thanks for coming.